Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, please. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes if I can. Your Honor, it's an honor to represent Ignacio Marin, who is with us today, Mr. Keitel, co-counsel, Mr. Rose, who was associate during the time of this trial. The county is required
to... Can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, I would. I'm Mary Ruth Mann. Thank you. The county is required to treat all employees with fairness. The county, in this instance, chose to play favorites. And now the county asks you to affirm that favoritism. Fairness in employment and in court is following established and known rules and doing so without self-service, without bias or appearance of fairness. In this case, court-established rules were not followed. Summary judgment standards were not followed with respect to the different treatment claims, the retaliation claim. Juror bias standards were not followed, and an unconstitutionally biased jury was seated. Evidence standards were not followed. Mr. Marin's pre-2008 evidence was excluded, and evidence was allowed that violated ER 403 and 404 from Dr. McLean. Civil Rule 50 standards were violated, and the retaliation prong of the hostile work environment was taken from the jury on the eve of closing, the primary focus of the case removed from the jury. And standards for private conversations, we submit, were not followed, as opposed to a public employment setting where complaints of discrimination and Weingarten meetings are not private conversations and have no expectation of privacy or that the matters discussed will not be taken from those meetings and discussed elsewhere, as they were broadly in this case.
So if a supervisor secretly records one of those meetings with no one else present except the employee, that would be a public meeting?
Your Honor, the question is whether it would be a crime, and I think it is not a private conversation where people do not expect that it will go beyond that. Whether it violates some other rule or policy of the county or an employer is a different question. But I think in a non-private conversation, it would not be a crime. Employers actually record their employees all the time, Your Honor.
Is it your position that every conversation between an employer's, a public employee supervisor and the person he's supervising regarding job performance is a public conversation?
I'm not saying it is a public conversation. I'm saying it is not a private conversation under the recording statute.
Okay. Are there any conversations a public employee supervisor could have with the employee he or she supervises that would be private under that statute?
Yes, I believe there are, and the case law is clear, similar to the public recording or the public record statute. Embarrassing personal matters, but it would not apply to employment matters where there's a public interest in them. So this court should remand Mr. Marin's case for a full and fair jury trial on all his claims with all of his evidence. The Boyd standard, now recognized, also called the Burlington Northern Standard for Retaliation, should have been applied to this case, where there's protected activity with a nexus to adverse actions, which are of the kind that would dissuade employees from coming forward about harassment or retaliation, the case has to go to the jury. In this case, with the direct evidence of discrimination that was present, it has to go to the jury. Retaliation has to go to the jury. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes.
I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. I'll have 5 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Patty Eakes. I'm a special deputy prosecutor representing King County in this matter, and also at counsel table is my associate, Damon Elder, who assisted in this appeal. This appeal arises from a unanimous jury verdict for King County. The parties put on their evidence over the course of 4 weeks on the plaintiff's claims of a hostile work environment and failure to accommodate. And ultimately, the jury rendered a verdict, unanimous verdict, in favor of King County. The plaintiff's evidence at trial was really severely lacking. Even if you interpret all of the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, no reasonable jury could have concluded or found in favor of the plaintiff on his claims. And that's because the facts of the case were very compelling, and the trial court, the initial court that decided the summary judgment, was reasonable in making its decision that two of the claims should go forward. But the fact of the matter is the evidence at trial established that Mr. Marin had worked at the county for 28 years as a wastewater operator, and that between 2009 and 2011, he had made a series of three separate complaints alleging discrimination. His complaints were made against at two different plants that were remotely located from each other, one in Magnolia and one in Renton, and that the complaints were made against three different crews, all of which were supervised by different people. The evidence at trial showed that the county listened to every complaint that Mr. Marin made. In each one of these discrimination complaints, they went and hired outside counsel who did an independent investigation and determined that there was no evidence of retaliation, or excuse me, of discrimination. I think the evidence at trial was also very strong that the county went out of its way to listen to everything Mr. Marin said and to investigate it and to attempt to accommodate all of his requests as well as the requests of his counsel. In the course of his employment. When he asked to be transferred out of his plant at Magnolia to Renton, that was given, even though that was against the union rules that would require him to remain at the Renton plant. He asked to change crews, and again, the county accommodated him and gave him a different crew. Once he moved to that crew, he acknowledged that he was happy and felt that he was supported in his position. Every accommodation Mr. Marin asked for was given to him. And ultimately, when he went out on his medical leave, after making a serious mistake at work, the county reached out repeatedly to try to determine what could be done in order to accommodate Mr. Marin and to bring him back to work. It was Mr. Marin who broke down the interactive process, and he elected to retire, and he voluntarily did so. This evidence, this case, Ms. Mann says, is about fairness. And I think the evidence at trial showed that the county has been eminently fair to Mr. Marin, and the court process has been eminently fair to Mr. Marin. He was given his day in court. The county didn't discipline him. They didn't fire him. He had a chance to try his case, his hostile work environment case, to the jury, and his failure to accommodate case to the jury, and the jury determined that there wasn't sufficient evidence and came back with a unanimous verdict. So, the county's perspective, there was no error in this case, and we ask that the court affirm the verdict in the case. Now, I am going to just address a couple of things. As the court knows, there are many assignments of error in this case. I believe there are 18 of them, and time isn't sufficient to address all of them. So unless the court has specific questions, I'd like to talk about the directed verdict decision as well as the summary judgment decision. Let me start with the directed verdict. After both of the parties completed their case, the trial court granted the motion for directed verdict on a very discrete issue. And that issue was the retaliation prong of the hostile work environment claim. And the court was correct in deciding that that claim should not go to the jury because Mr. Marin had not produced any evidence to show that the people that he was alleging had retaliated against him were aware that he engaged in protected conduct. And the law is very clear, at least in Washington, and there's some split in other jurisdictions, but that in order to make out a retaliation complaint, we don't get to just complain and say that we've been retaliated against because we made any sort of a claim. And in this case, that was particularly relevant because Mr. Marin claimed things like, I was subject to retaliation because I complained that another employee had made a mess. You have to engage in protected conduct. And there was no evidence in this case that all of the people, and there were many of them, that Mr. Marin was accusing of engaging in retaliation were aware that he had engaged in any sort of protected conduct. And the court certainly gave plaintiff and his counsel an opportunity to present that evidence. They did need to lay an adequate foundation before accusing somebody of retaliation, but there simply wasn't any evidence. As a result, the court decided to dismiss that aspect of the case. Now, the plaintiff's theory is that the court should allow a retaliation claim to go forward with basically an inference that if Mr. Marin had made any sort of a complaint, which he did, to HR, that we should presume that everybody within the organization knew about that protected conduct, and therefore everything that occurs after potentially could be retaliation. And that's simply not what the law is, nor what the law should be. Because if that were the law, it would produce all kinds of absurd results, simply because Mr. Marin or any employer, particularly an employer of this size, would be faced with the situation of an actionable retaliation claim any time an employee had initially made a complaint. All actions by supervisors, coworkers, anybody else in the organization could potentially be a retaliation claim. So there simply aren't any cases to support that for good reason. Now, the appellate courts we found, because we looked to see if there are any courts that had agreed with the proposition that plaintiff is putting forward, and the only circuit that we found has dealt with it is the First Circuit in the context of a hostile work environment claim. And we cited the court to a couple of cases out of the First Circuit related to that issue. In the First Circuit, they have soundly rejected the theory that the plaintiff is asking this court to take in this case, that there doesn't have to be a connection and that there can kind of be an imputation of knowledge across the organization. Now, plaintiff does cite to cases that involve a standalone retaliation claim, but that's markedly different than a claim of hostile work environment, retaliation within the context of a hostile work environment. And whether we don't necessarily agree with those cases, and there is some split in the circuits on that issue, but it makes a little bit more logical support for it simply because in a standalone retaliation claim, you have to be able to prove that there was an adverse employment action. And as a result, you're having an employer act on behalf of, or the action has to be taken on behalf of the entire employer. And so some courts have found that in that situation that you can impute knowledge to other people within the organization. But this court doesn't need to reach that issue because there is no court that has said that in the context of a hostile work environment claim that retaliation can be premised on an imputed knowledge across the organization. Sure.
There was a summary judgment dismissal of a retaliation claim.
Correct.
And no adverse work activity was imposed on Mr. Marin, as I understand, was the basis for the trial court's decision.
That's correct.
So the trial court there did not concern itself with the knowledge of people because there wasn't any showing of the wrongful act by the employer that's required. Is that your understanding?
That's correct. I mean, there were two aspects of it, but, you know, you had the aspect of the hostile work environment, which plaintiff argued in and of itself could be the adverse action. That argument, however, now is precluded by the fact that the jury has already found that
well,
there was no basis for it.
What the jury found to decide whether summary judgment should have been denied.
No, my point only being going back that if the court were to say, well, the court should have looked at the hostile work environment. At this point, there's preclusion on that issue, and we've cited you a case on that. But with respect to the adverse employment action, yes, the court found that one of the things that the plaintiff had failed to meet was showing that there was any sort of adverse action. So if you put aside the hostile work environment aspect that they claimed was an adverse action, there were only three other incidences that the plaintiff claimed had been adverse actions, but they weren't adverse actions as a matter of law.
Well, what I'm struggling with is that counsel closing said that the Boyd, or also called it the Burlington Northern Standard, should have been applied and wasn't. And I'm trying to figure out how that fits into what actually happened.
Sure. Well,
I'm missing a piece here.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Boyd decision didn't come out until 2015. And so it was after the case was actually tried. And I would say about the Boyd decision, it's not binding. It's Division II, as the court knows. But what it ignores is that the whole line of cases within Division I and across the state generally, which say that an adverse employment action has to have some sort of a tangible impact on a person's pay or working conditions. And that has always been the standard, and Boyd did not purport to overrule or even address those cases that say that. So the court was correct, the trial court was correct here, in that the Tyner versus State case, as well as the other decisions out of this jurisdiction, have found that in order for it to be an adverse employment action, you have to have something more. You have to have it be a tangible impact on either your pay or your conditions. So thank you, and we do believe there has been no error in the case, and we'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'd like to pick up where I left off.
Before you do that, yes. Could you identify, or at least remind me, what the adverse employment action you contend occurred?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There are multiple adverse employment actions. First, there was unwarranted discipline of Mr. Marin. The reprimand that he suffered at West Point from Mr. Sagnus that was directly caused by retaliation for Mr. Marin's complaint of harassment by Mr. Horton happened at the same time. Mr. Marin goes in to complain of harassment to Mr. Sagnus, and Mr. Sagnus says, I'm upset, I am angry, I'll do what I have to do. You calling in sick because of this harassment is bullshit, and that results in discipline of Mr. Marin. Mr. Marin grieves that, claiming a hostile work environment harassment by Mr. Sagnus, and that directly, when an investigation began, causes an adverse transfer. Now, initially, he agrees to the transfer because he is afraid to be on Mr. Sagnus's crew while the investigation's going on. But what happens then is King County finds out unequivocally, uncontested, that Mr. Sagnus holds vicious retaliatory animus against Mr. Marin, and they can't put him back on that crew. They can't bring him back to West Point because Mr. Sagnus has authority over all the operators. And that becomes an adverse, permanent transfer of Mr. Marin. It was not remedied. It was a job in which he could not succeed. The testimony in the record from Mr. Fisher is that it would take months to learn each part of the plant. There are five or six different areas. It can take months to a year to learn the parts of that plant. And Mr. Marin was untrained as to the Renton plant. That played out in every crew he was on. His crews would not let him touch equipment. They set him up by sending him to some complicated a chemical transfer that witness Brody said he should never have been sent to alone. They sent him to with instructions on how to reset a 4,000 volt duty pump, told him turn it off at the wall, and then he gets a TLC for not knowing how to lock out every piece of energized equipment at Renton. And the TLC is an adverse action. It threatens discipline if Mr. Marin does not know how to lock out every piece of energized equipment at that plant, and there are 9,000 pieces of equipment. What happened was, when Mr. Marin would not give up his harassment claim involving the original West Point harassment and the terrible treatment he got there, the Horton Sagnus, when he would not give that up, Ms. Alardo said she would pull the discipline out of his file, but it was conditioned on a finding there was no harassment and that would not go further. He would not accept that. He stood on that, what he knew had happened to him there, and he knew Mr. Sagnus, and so did King County. It is retaliation to hold wrongful discipline over an employee's head to leverage them to give up a claim of harassment. It is the employer's responsibility to remedy harassment promptly and completely to protect employees from discrimination. So what happened in this case, when there was not a remedy, Mr. Marin became ill. He was denied accommodations. Counsel is wrong about that. Accommodations were requested to deal with his anxiety, to let him have a walk around with a safety officer who could show him where to find the equipment-specific instructions for locking out these 9,000 pieces of equipment. And King County knew the truth about that. They couldn't accommodate him with that because they were in violation of federal law and did not have equipment-specific procedures for the equipment they were holding him accountable for locking out. This is an extreme case of adverse action. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.